Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radio,
globally
health,
recognized
prosperity,
leader in non-GMO
loving
education.
Relationships, or peace
if you know
of
your
mind.
Party's extension, you may enter that at any
oh boy.
Time for general
guys,
inquiries
for the,
and product assistance. Please dial
for
donations
Karen,
and supporter services. Please dial 2.
Oh my goodness.
For a company directory by first name,
right,
please
that's
dial
not
8.
Gonna work. Hang on.
To repeat this menu, press *. Thank you.
Okay. There we go. Let's try that. Sorry about that, guys.
That's better.
All right. So we're trying to call Jeffrey Smith on his landline, but we did not get the number in time for the show to go live.
Okay.
So do you want us to call you back that way? Because
no,
we hear
I'm
you
fine.
Really well.
If you can hear well, that's fine. Let's do it here.
Okay, that's great. Hey, so everyone, today's show is about genetically modified organisms, and I'm really excited to have Jeffrey Smith on the line today because he is like the foremost, world's foremost expert in GMOs. And I remember, gosh, it must have been way over a decade ago that my husband at the time said, you got to read this book, and Seeds of Deception. And, of course, I didn't read it, but he says, you're a doctor. You have to at least listen to this audio recording. So I said, okay, I'll listen to it. So I'm listening to this thing, and my eyes are getting wider and wider, and I was just completely bowled over by this whole thing. I didn't really know what to do with it, but I just thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is going on in the world, and what happens to these poor scientists that tell people, you know, that you know, genetically modified foods are not necessarily safe. And now fast forward 10 or more years, and there's so much more data there. And Jeffrey Smith is the author of Seeds of Deception and also the movie, which I really love. You guys did a great job, Genetic Roulette, about GMOs. And so there's a lot more out there online, more people talking about it. The whole farmers market movement is huge. I know in our small community, we have a farm to fork festival every year. I went from basically, you know, shopping at the local Price Chopper to, you know, shopping at the natural food market, and then now I'm part of a CSA, and the farmers, some of them actually deliver to my house. You go to the farmers market every week, and a lot of that is just due to this amazing work that Jeffrey and his organization have done to really make us alerted to, wow, we really have to watch what's on our plate and what goes in our mouths. So welcome, Jeffrey Smith. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, I know you're a super busy guy, and you're kind of flying all over the place and giving talks. And I do want to, you know, give a shout-out to my friend Sandy Goldie, who's part of the Tipping Point Network in Atlanta, Georgia, doing some great work out there. And we meet every week, and she tells me all the great, amazing stuff, and the new people joining the Tipping Point Network there to really promote, you know, healthy eating and, you know, buying locally from local farmers, organic food, and staying away from genetically modified foods. So, Jeffrey, I wanted to kind of go back in time and say to you, okay, how does a guy get into this stuff? Like, what happened to you that you decided to be kind of this, you know, this whistleblower, so to speak, about genetically modified foods?
Well, back in 1996, I went to a lecture by a genetic engineer, and he was really the whistleblower. He was intimately aware of why the technology was completely not ready to be used in food. He knew exactly why the technology should never have been taken out of the laboratory by Monsanto, and yet because of patents expiring and return on investment requirements, they were going to thrust this technology, which had a potential negative footprint that was unprecedented in history. It could affect negatively everyone who eats and then all living beings and all future generations, because once released outdoors, it'll affect the ecosystem and you're polluting the gene pool. It's not like a toxic chemical spill that will clean up over time. This actually will propagate generation after generation as part of the gene pool and be irreversible for all time. And yet, as he was pointing out in this lecture that I attended, no one was paying attention. There was hardly anyone in the United States that knew was going to happen. There was no required safety studies by the FDA. Companies like Monsanto told us that the Agent Orange and PCBs and DDT were safe, were entirely put in charge of the determination of whether their own foods were safe. And this was done by a hijacking of the FDA. The White House had told the FDA promote GMOs, and so they brought in Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, later Monsanto's vice president, now back at the FDA as the U.S. Food Safety Czar, so kind of revolving door poster child. And he was in charge of the FDA policy that said no safety testing necessary, no labeling necessary. The excuse, he said, was because we're not aware of any information showing that GMOs were significantly different. That was built into the policy, and that was a lie, which became public back in 1999 when 44,000 secret internal memos were made public from the FDA's files, and it showed that the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's scientists was exactly the opposite, that GMOs were dangerous, could lead to allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. The same concerns that were expressed in this meeting that I went to in 1996.
Whoa. Wow. So, I mean, right now my trust for the FDA is like negative whatever. But, you know, so long ago we would trust our government, trust the government to protect us. So I think the average person thinks, well, if it's in the stores, it must be safe. And what you're saying is that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Unfortunately, that's the case. You see, the FDA has turned a blind eye to all of the research right now. I'll give you an example. Let's take a look at the Environmental Protection Agency. That's another agency that we're supposed to have trust in. They monitor the effects of pesticides. Now, most genetically modified crops are sprayed with herbicide. Most are called Roundup Ready. They're engineered by Monsanto so that the crops are able to be sprayed with Roundup herbicide, and the herbicide then is stored in the plant portion, which we eat. Now, there's a myth propagated by Monsanto that Roundup is completely safe. It turns out it's extremely dangerous, and we'll talk about that. A couple of scientists I know called it probably the most chronically toxic chemical on the planet due to its ability to cause harm and its widespread presence right now. So when the EPA evaluates Roundup, they don't look at Roundup. They look at its so-called active ingredient, glyphosate. Well, first of all, when they evaluate glyphosate, they ignore a decade of research in what's called endocrine disruptors. We know that at very, very tiny, tiny levels, these endocrine disruptors can cause more harm than at higher doses. But the EPA entirely ignores the minute doses and pretends that chemicals just work on a what's called a linear situation where the more the dose, the more the problem. Now, we know that at very tiny levels, at parts per trillion, glyphosate can promote the growth of breast cancer cells. It can disrupt the hormones completely in the endocrine system. None of that is looked at. What's worse is they only look at so-called active ingredients, but there's other ingredients in the formulation of Roundup that are 10,000 times more toxic, and the formulation altogether can be as much as 1,000 times more dangerous than the so-called active ingredient. And when they injected glyphosate into embryos, chicken and frog embryos, versus injecting the whole Roundup, Roundup was so much more effective at creating very, very horrible birth defects. It's more connected to creating tumors and cancer. And none of that is looked at because the EPA's systems for evaluation are basically dictated by the companies they're supposed to regulate. So we're ingesting all of this Roundup through these Roundup-ready crops. And in the research, in the published peer-reviewed research, Roundup is linked to cancer, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, reproductive disorders, gastrointestinal problems, autism, allergies, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, kidney failure, aggression, depression, gluten sensitivity, and a host of other problems.
Wow, and the list goes on. And, you know, in my office we do some muscle testing, and it's interesting because there's a lot of people in my population that have food allergies and food sensitivities, among other chronic issues. And when we do testing on them, sometimes it'll come up that they're sensitive, intolerant, or allergic to corn. So I always ask, for example, if it's corn or some other GMO that's commonly out there, I said, you know, are you allergic or intolerant to organic corn? It's very interesting. Some people are. They're just, you know, intolerant to corn, period. But there's a lot of other people who become intolerant because they've been ingesting processed food and there's GMO corn there. So they'll be intolerant to GMO corn but not organic corn, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, I've heard that. I heard probably more testimonials of patients that have felt better and had relief and elimination of symptoms on a non-GMO diet than perhaps anyone in the world. And I've also talked to a lot of practitioners. And one practitioner, for example, who at the time in 2010 had already prescribed more than 5,000 patients to non-GMO diets, her experience was that when the GMO causes the harm, you end up being sensitive not only to the genetically engineered variety, but also to the non-GM variety and even possibly related foods, and that you have to sort of build up the immune system, repair the gut, et cetera, and then you can introduce foods back in that are not GMO. Other people have different experience. Some people I know can eat, soy and corn in Europe where it's non-GMO or organic in the U.S., but if they eat conventional, they have a reaction almost immediately. Some people can't go out to eat because they get a reaction because the hidden GMOs perhaps in the cooking oil or the salad dressing or other things. So there's a lot of variety. The number one category of symptoms that where the largest number of the audience says they're recovering from is always, in every single case in the 1,000 audiences, 100 audiences with over 1,000 people, is gastrointestinal. And then it's energy and brain fog, as well as weight problems, headaches, migraines, allergic and other immune system problems, and skin conditions. And then you have more scattered, less popular but nonetheless reliable responses relating from autistic symptoms and diabetes and high blood pressure and things like that, where you get people, but it's not the vast majority of those that have raised their hand that said they're getting better from non-GMO diets.
Oh, yeah, that's a great summary. Thank you so much. Well, and we were so excited that Vermont voted to label GMOs. I mean, I was screaming in the house when I found out. I was like,
oh, isn't that great?
You know, and then, of course, Monsanto wants to sue them. And, of course, there's other states now with bills out. And so what's going on with that whole movement? I mean, I donated to, you know, some of that stuff and wanted to get an update from you.
Okay, good question. I was just in Oregon touring. They have a ballot initiative for labeling, which gets a vote pretty soon. It's actually a vote by mail up until Election Day. It's looking good for passing, although the biotech industry in California, they spend $1 million a day to lie to people. They lied saying that labeling is going to increase prices, even though in 64 countries that require labeling, there's no increase in prices. They lied about the nature of the bill. They lied about the exemptions. They lied about what the FDA had said, what the dietitians had said, and they got caught lying, but there's no law against lying in a political campaign. They've taken advantage of that. They did the same thing in Washington State, and they're going to do it in Oregon and also in Colorado, where I'm going to visit next month. It was there earlier. They also have it on their ballot. Now, when Vermont passed its labeling bill, there was a threat of a lawsuit that was pretty overt by a lawyer for Monsanto, and they've carried through with their threat. They filed a lawsuit, and it's the Grocery Manufacturers Association and Monsanto and others, and the state of Vermont actually has a fundraiser page for people who can donate to their legal costs to fight Monsanto, which is great. I actually had recommended the same and talked to when I testified before their committee a year ago. I suggested that we can do fundraising, crowdsourcing of the funds because they were going to go it alone. In Connecticut and in Maine, they passed labeling bills, but they didn't want to face a lawsuit on their own, so they laws that required at least four other states in the area to pass as well before it was enacted. And so they're not being sued, but they're not being as bold as those in Vermont. Now, what's happening on a bigger scale is interesting. The FDA has the power to preempt states' rights for labeling. They could come in, and once it's passed in Oregon or Colorado, even before, and say, well, we don't want a patchwork of regulations, so we're just going to eliminate the ability for states to pass laws, and we'll do it ourselves. And what happened in restaurant menu labeling is any indication, they'll pretend they're going to do something, and then they're going to do nothing. Now, we think that what's actually going to happen, what will really dictate terms, is the swing vote in the negotiation tables in the back room in Washington. Right now, on one side is 93% of consumers want labeling. On the other side is Monsanto and Dow and DuPont and Syngenta. They're the GMO companies. And with them are the Grocery Manufacturers Association. But what's happening in the marketplace is extremely significant. It was a tipping point of consumer rejection that kicked GMOs out of Europe in 1999. And the same food companies that sell us GMOs removed it there 15 years ago. Well, we just had a tipping point last year in the natural products industry where it became a marketing liability to use GMOs. So there's 22,000 products that are verified as non-GMO, many more in the pipeline. And now we have things like Cheerios and Grape Nuts in the conventional markets that are labeled non-GMO. If they increase market share and the rest of the food industry realizes it's too late, they have to get rid of GMOs because their competitor might go non-GMO before them, steal their market share, which is so important for these companies. So that's what we call a tipping point. And we believe that the tipping point is happening. The Institute for Responsible Technology, my organization at responsibletechnology.org, we're helping to engineer that tipping point with behavior change messaging, explaining to people about the health dangers, which we can go into. There's a lot more than we've touched on now. And that drives people to non-GMO diets, which changes the market dynamics. If the food companies are eliminating GMOs, their resistance to mandatory labeling of GMOs disappears, and they may reverse their position, and then they will be on the side of the consumer and may actually force the FDA to do what 9 out of 10 Americans want, and that's to label GMOs.
Ooh, that is exciting. Now, I'm glad you talked about your website because I was going to ask you about that. So responsibletechnology.org, and is there some sort of handout or download or something that people can get so they can see what they should be looking at the grocery store?
Yes, you can go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com. At non-GMOshoppingguide.com, there's the list of the 22,000 products that are verified as non-GMO, and you can download a PDF from there. And the iPhone app was just accidentally shut down, so I'm not going to mention it today. It'll be on that site when it's up again. That information is there for all the shoppers. Also, you mentioned the movie. The movie turns out to be the quickest way, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, the documentary, the quickest way to convert someone to a non-GMO diet. So we have tested it. We've asked people to rate themselves before and after seeing. And so we recommend that if someone hears this or they're already eating non-GMO and they want to get their friends or family or whatever to avoid GMOs, go to geneticroulettemovie.com. as the other website. So we have three websites, responsibletechnology.org with lots of information, non-GMOshoppingguide.com to help you avoid GMOs, and geneticroulettemovie.com where you can watch the movie online or buy the DVD with a bonus disc.
That's great. And, well, when I ask people what they think GMOs are, what foods have, it's very interesting what people say. The funniest thing is they say wheat. Now, I'm not aware that wheat in our country is genetically modified, but I think there's some sense of, well, there's gluten sensitivity, and therefore it must be, and it's been hybridized, and they mix that all up. So what are the top four or five in this country?
Well, you're correct that wheat is not transgenic or genetically engineered. Sometimes people use the word genetic modification to talk about changing the gene pool through normal hybridization and selective breeding, definition of genetic modification. So if some people are uncomfortable with that term, they can use genetic engineering, and certainly wheat is not at this point. But the biotech industry does plan to genetically engineer wheat and virtually every other food crop and livestock and fish and mosquitoes and other insects. They want to replace nature. So this is a pretty pivotal time. Right now they only have 9 food crops, soy, corn, which are the derivatives are in virtually all processed foods, not all of them, but most of them. You have cotton for cottonseed oil, canola for canola oil. Most of the sugar in the United States, more than 50%, is from sugar beets, and all of the sugar beets are genetically engineered. So if it says cane sugar, it's not GMO. If it says sugar, it is, unless it says non-GMO or organic. Then you have papaya from Hawaii or China, some zucchini and yellow squash, not all of it, plus alfalfa, which is used for hay for animals. So those 9, soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, alfalfa, papaya, zucchini, and yellow squash. And as I say, there's so many things up on the approval or in the pipeline somewhere. We have apples and you have salmon, and they just approved corn and soy that are now resistant to a component of Agent Orange, a highly toxic carcinogenic herbicide called 2,4-D that ends up producing dioxin in the process of producing it. So extremely dangerous approval this week, which will be contested in the courts.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you for that. And I was just thinking, missed the yellow squash one. I think we couldn't find something the other day in the grocery store, and I'm not a big expert on squash. We bought something that wasn't organic, but it was because we were looking for the specific recipe. But I'm going to keep my eyes out better. Now, the sugar beets is really interesting because I have developed an allergy to beets, and even the organic ones I can't eat now without having some reaction.
The good news is, the beets that are at the table are different. Sugar beets are white. They're not served on the table. They're just used for sugar. Now, there could be cross-pollination, but it's probably very slight. In fact, it could be cross-pollination to Swiss chard from the sugar beet. In fact, canola can cross-pollinate with broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts, the brassicas. So that's another aspect. Not only are we releasing these into the environment where they persist, but they can also cross into related species.
Now, I've heard arguments for the other side in the past that say, well, canola oil, it's oil, there's no protein left, the person can't react to it, it's just oil, all oil is the same, it doesn't really matter if it's genetically modified because there's no protein left. So what's your argument for that?
Well, that's great. Let's first catch everyone up as to the DNA and the protein thing, and then we'll explain how it's not just those two things. When you insert a gene, let's say you want to create a corn plant and turn it into a pesticide. So you insert a pesticidal gene that produces a toxin called BT toxin. It breaks open little holes in the walls of the stomach of insects to kill them.
Right.
Now, it turns out that BT toxin can also poke holes in human cells, which might explain a lot of the gastrointestinal problems, as well as other diseases related to leaky gut, where there's holes in the walls of the intestines and undigested food proteins and chemicals and bacteria from the gut can enter the bloodstream. And that's not a good thing, and it's linked to all sorts of autoimmune disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism, inflammation, food allergies, etc. Now, the other thing is that the gene that's inserted into the crops, we know from a study that was published in 2004, can transfer into the DNA of bacteria living inside our intestines. So it's possible that once it transfers to the DNA, it might continue to function, which means long after we stop eating GMOs, we might have these genetically engineered proteins produced continuously inside our digestive tract. And that might explain why the BT toxin was found in 93% of the pregnant women tested in their blood. It's possible because they were producing it in their own intestinal tract inside their gut flora. So if you think of those horrible ideas of the BT toxin poking holes in cells that also can link to immune responses, and you think of the possibility of genes transferring to gut bacteria, those things would require in the GMO that it either has the DNA or the protein. The BT toxin is a protein. Now, if you don't have the BT toxin protein or the gene in, say, corn oil, then you don't have the risk of the gene transferring to your gut bacteria. You're not going to end up ingesting the whole poking toxin. But what can go wrong in the oil? That's where another risk of GMOs comes in, and that is the process of creating the GMO is so disruptive to the DNA, you could have hundreds or thousands different genes changing their levels of expression. So in Monsanto's corn, for example, it's BT, it also has 43 different genes that have changed their levels of expression, including one that was switched on that produces an allergen that was not normally produced in corn. You have completely proteins that have completely changed shape, which can change a harmless protein into a deadly one. But you also have changes in endocrine disruptors and other things that might survive the creation of the oil. You could have fat-soluble toxins that are increased. So in other words, the background noise from genetic engineering could change the compounds and change the toxins that could exist and persist in the oils, even if the proteins are taken out, even if the DNA is not there. So the rule of thumb is this. Even if you don't understand all of the details, the rule of thumb looks like this. The more something is processed that's genetically engineered, the less risk from genetic engineering there is. So sugar from sugar beets is highly processed. It's 99% pure. But in that 1%, you may have some toxins that have resulted from the genetic engineering process or the application of Roundup on the crops. But if you're having corn and you have corn oil, that's less risky than corn on the cob from Monsanto that has two genes pumping out BT toxin, plus it's Roundup ready, so it's been sprayed with Roundup and it's drenched with Roundup, and it's all the DNA intact and all of the proteins intact. So that would be much more risky than the corn oil or even the high fructose corn syrup, according to this theory, based just on the risk associated with being a genetically engineered crop.
Oh, that's a great explanation. That makes so much sense. I have background in biochemistry and molecular biology, you know, the whole genes off, gene on, the promoters, you know, we would splice promoters into bacteria. So I've actually done genetic engineering, not of food, but, you know, of various different experiments. And that effect of you change one thing in an organism and it's like the FDA and everyone thinks, oh, it's just that one thing. But that the body isn't like that and organisms aren't like that. You change one thing and there's a cascade of shifts that the organism makes to accommodate that one change. Just like when you give a drug to someone, you're just like, say, cutting off this one enzyme, but there's like 5,000 other enzymes, you know, 5,000 other processes that may be affected by that one drug and hence all the side effects and toxicities and that kind of thing. So that's exactly what you're explaining. It's not just about, you know, that piece of protein or that piece of DNA that's going to do harm. It's that process of genetic engineering that then creates other monsters, unfortunately, that can make us sick.
Exactly. Go
ahead.
The number one result from genetic engineering that's above anything else is surprise side effects, because it's not rocket science. It's so much more complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's so much online now that's available thanks to the internet, just spreading the word about this. There's some other GMO movies too. I know not by you, but that have been created. I don't know too much about them. I haven't watched them yet.
And we have a free movie online called Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, 18-minute film on genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. It'll help you pick the right dairy. It's only 18 minutes again. It's at yourmilkondrugs.com. We have other short videos at Genetic Roulette, at Institute for Responsible Technology, YouTube channel, lots of them up there. So there's a lot of resources online that people can get right away. And the result is they're going to be eating non-GMO by tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And I think, you know, even when we have local farmers and things like that, sometimes it sounds embarrassing to ask them, but I do, you know, do you grow these organically? Where did you get these seeds? And if I kind of get a blank stare, which isn't that often, but most everybody around here grows organically because that's what people want. But I think it's important for people not just to assume that, you know, the cart down the street, you know, selling corn is organic unless they have to ask to make sure.
Absolutely.
I thought we were we were such a small area here, I was thinking, well, you know, GMO crops, they probably don't even grow even close to this remote area. But then a patient of mine used to work for somebody, and they were doing research for Monsanto. And this is just, you know, like maybe 50 miles north of here. And I was like, ah, I had no idea.
Yeah, I've been, they're everywhere. I've been to 40 countries, and they're all over the world. They really, their plan, according to their consultant, was to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them, and they're working hard to try and achieve that goal.
So if people want to donate money, where should they and who should they donate to help Vermont or to help, you know, you and your organization promote awareness?
Well, if you go to responsibletechnology.org, there's a donate button, and we are driving the tipping point. We're working in all the arenas in all the states that have labeling campaigns. We're educating people to create the tipping point. We're helping people avoid GMOs through lots and lots of information. And we would love to, we actually have a five-year plan to rid the most countries, including the United States, of GMO food and feed. And we're raising money for that right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, last question before we go is that, you know, someone like me who's a proponent of natural healing and natural ways, I'd love to be able to, or other people in the community even, love to be able to talk to school children or parents groups or, you know, different groups of people, the Kiwanis. I mean, there's people that aren't aware. So how do people like me who want to do that, like, get slides or get training or like present this in a way that's coherent and, you know, does you guys justice all the work that you do?
Great question. We have a 7-hour online speaker training program. It's available from the homepage at responsibletechnology.org. And there's slides that are fully scripted and a description of how to present both in a 2-minute context as well as in a lecture format. And we've trained about 1,200 people, and people are very excited because they feel the confidence to go ahead and give the talks. They have the tools, and it's been a very successful expansion. We're cloning ourselves, essentially.
Ah, that's perfect. Well, congratulations, Jeffrey, for all the amazing work you and your organization have done. More power to you. We'll continue contributing. And I'm so pleased that you were able to join us on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and thanks everyone for listening in. Until next time, bye for now.